Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast, everybody. It's your boy Steve here, and we got another banger on our hands, folks. All about the Black Pea Stone Nation. What? I've never even heard of them. AKA the Black Rangers. Today I talk about the Black Rangers, AKA Black Pea Stone Nation, AKA Elrukins, and current members of the People Nation Gang Alliance. Formed by two Chicago kids in the Wood Lawn neighborhood, they became minor enforcers for older gangsters, then took what they learned and pushed them out. Eugene Bull Harrison and Jeff Prince Fort ran the Woodlawn neighborhood. However, multiple jail stints brought the Stones to the attention of the world when Fort converted to Islam and began discussing a plan to destabilize the U.S. government through domestic terrorism with Libyan dictator Gaddafi. What? Even with their leaders incarcerated, the gang continued to create factions, make alliances, and still to this day distribute drugs and kill gang members in L.A. and Chicago. Wow, what a great episode. This one is done by the great Dr. Joe Hoswell. And my guest today is Dave Hellum. Dave Hellum is a very good friend of mine. Also, like George Perez on the last episode, one of the newest paid regulars at the world famous comedy store. Yep, he is. And guys, this guy is a great guy. I definitely think I helped him get in a little bit. One of the funny stories. So Dave is a legend in the Chicago comedy scene. The man is the shit out there. He has a show called The Dope Show, I believe. And it's been running in Chicago for, I think, 10, 15 years. Sold out every day. He makes some money from that, I believe. And he doesn't have to be there anymore. I'm not even sure how I started linking up with Dave. But Dave, when he first moved here, he brought the Dope Show with him, and he had a bar show on Sunset across from the Netflix building. That was just, in my opinion at the time, I always felt the coolest show. Mainly because it was definitely was a black show with a black audience, but it wasn't hood. I don't know if that makes sense. Maybe if you've done comedy, you more know what I'm talking about. These were all like extremely successful young African-American people in the industry. And then the people that Dave would choose were always, in my opinion, some of the best from both worlds of stand-up. I would definitely say the people who did it leaned a little bit more club. I've had some people DMing me asking me what's the difference between club and alt comedy. Club comedy is normally a little more punchline heavy, kind of like your Bobby Lee's, your me, your Burt Kreischer's, your Tom Segura's, oddly enough, maybe the biggest names in comedy. And your alt comedy is things done on the fringes. Like a lot of times they're in bookstores or bar shows, and it's a lot of times more experimental. And those are the types of people like Tig Notaro or Rory Scovel, stuff like that. I put it to indoor and outdoor basketball. You know, if you're indoor basketball, you tend to be good at basketball. You tend to hold your own with everybody else. If you're doing outdoor, anyone can do outdoor. The best people in outdoor can probably do best. You know, Skip to My Lou. He played for the Raptors, and he was in the N1 mixtape. But a lot of times, it doesn't translate. And sometimes people who play indoor can't go outdoor, but a lot of times they probably can. So that's that. I don't even know where the fuck I was talking about that. Oh, but Dave, that's why. Because Dave had a bar show, which you'd consider alt, but it had banger guys on it. He and I linked up from there. I think we would just hang out a lot at the comedy store. I would say hi to him. One of the funny times is he, when the pandemic was ending, they were looking for their new crop of paid regulars because Emily, my good friend, is the new booker there. And every booker wants to put, just like a sports team, wants to put their thumbprint on the club. So she was looking for some new people. I suggested Dave. Dave, you know what's funny, man, is I always think everyone has my same brain. I am extremely calculated, and I'm extremely good at finding the path between two things that I want and where I am. And now you're saying, oh, well, anyone can do that. Yes, but I can do it pretty well, and I think that's how I've been able to get things, you know. A lot of times it's really you just look at other people, see what they're doing, line yourself up to them, try and follow their path. For me, it's always been Jesus Trejo. I see Jesus. I try to run my career as he did when he was in my area. Why? Because he's extremely funny. He's built himself up from nothing. He did it himself. He works hard, and he's very funny, and he's a great guy. So with me, when I was the Comedy Store, when I tried to get in there, I fucking knew everything. Okay? You don't go into a battle without knowing who you're up against unless you're fucking preparing to fail. You know? It's like going to an interview and you don't know the guy's name that you're interviewing with. And you're like, oh, he's like, hey, nice to meet you, Steve. And you're like, hey, what's your name? So Dave gets one of the auditions in the belly room. He crushes. And I'm talking him up to Emily because Emily is a new booker of the Comedy Store. But before she was a side booker, she booked La Jolla in the belly room. I have always had a belly room show. So I always knew her. And I was, you know, I'm just a pretty chill dude. So I was never like, a lot of the belly room people would yell at her or do all this kind of shit. I was just kind of always like, yeah, whatever. And then we would hang out. We would talk about comedy, talk about life. So I actually have like a legitimate friend. And I saw this with the last booker, Adam, whereas he and I's relationship was based off of power, you know. Like, he hired me as my boss and as the booker of the Comedy Store. He hired me as a door guy and passed me. So the relationship's not really there. But just like at your work, if you've got a friend who gets promoted and your friend's cool, not like a fucking psycho, the kind of relationship you got, even though there is more authority, kind of stays the same, right? Because I would see, I remember when Adam was there and he was turning it around, you could see how he was kind of, what's the word? Standoffish with everybody, but the guys that were either already paid regulars when he worked there as a GM, because like the GM of the Comedy Store, the man has power, but he doesn't have power on comedy side. He just has power on like drinks and shit. And there's kind of a rule that those guys don't mess with the comedy aspect. So, you know, they're just like normal human beings. So his relationship with the guys then, where they would actually make fun of it and everything. So once he became a booker, he didn't really change that because he enjoyed it because they were his friends, so the power dynamics were different. Essentially, that's where I am with Emily. So he goes on stage and crushes, and I talk to Emily after, and she goes, yeah, let me talk to your friend. And I go, okay. And then she goes, let me talk to Dave. I'd like to, you know, get him on the development path. That's where he starts calling his avails every Monday. We all call our avails at the Comedy Store every Monday. Okay, if you're a paid regular, you get your spots on Tuesday. And me, I get two spots normally. I normally get a main room and one OR, which I would like three, but honestly, I'm up at the main room on Saturdays at the Comedy Store. It's the greatest comedy club of all time, and I get an OR. So the main room, you kind of want to do all your best stuff. OR, you can fuck around. There's no rules. So she goes, I want to get him on development spots. And development spots are belly room spots. That's where I was for 2.5-3 years. I'm still pretty good to get through that quick. And then you call in your avails and you get like Monday through Saturday belly room spots. Tuesday, Thursday, belly room spots. So I go, okay. This is kind of like what I like to do, man. If I believe in someone, I like to help them out anyway. So this was kind of my plan. You know, I was going to get him to go talk to her. So we're in the parking lot, and we go in the parking lot because no one's allowed out there. And then I'm talking to Emily, and he's kind of buzzed, and he's just stoked that he just went up in the belly room and crushed in front of the booker. And he comes out there, and she is a very, she's just a normal person, you know. She's probably like 36, but she looks probably 28, 29. Pretty lady, thin, fashionable, cool. Doesn't look like a gatekeeper. Gatekeepers are people in comedy that, like, the booker Ryan at Comedy Central's gatekeeper, Paige at the Comedy at the Improv used to be a gatekeeper. People that hold the gate, they're at the gate of your dreams, essentially. That's what we call them. So he comes out and he's so excited. He's like, "Man, I just crushed!" And then he goes past Emily. Emily goes, "Good job!" And she goes, "Yeah, thanks, lady." And then he kind of cuts her out of the circle. And then you know, if you're at work and your friend fucks up in front of the boss and your actual friend, you're going to want to be like, hey, have you met, or hey, it's good. Hey, Dave, who's fucking up? You know, hey, this is our boss. You know, remember, it's our boss. So you try to save him. But if you're a comedian, you just watch him flounder and die, and then you can kind of save him at the end. So he's just talking about how good he did and all this stuff, and just cutting Emily out of the conversation and out of he's out of everything. And then I start, then I just bust his balls about how he just cut off Emily, and she walks away, and I go, you know who that was? He goes, what? I was like, that was the Booker, dumbass. He's like, what? No. And he just has this whole panic attack for almost 3 days. But he got past, crushed his audition. Luckily, Emily started bringing back auditions. I got past because of, I mean, honestly, at the time, Adam was watching every Monday's Potluck. So he saw me do well for fucking, you know, 3 years on Potluck. So I don't know if he needed me necessarily to showcase. But this was after the pandemic. People weren't doing that. Dave crushed his audition. So that's that. I don't really know what the fuck I was talking about there. And then he got passed. So that's how he did it. And we started going to his show. His show was fucking sick. His show actually was so hip and cool, man, that the last time I did it, Dumbfounded and Anderson .Paak were in the front row. And as I got off stage, Anderson .Paak stood up, shook my hand, and said, I really love your stuff. And that is a top career move for me by far. I mean, it's one of my, I've seen him in concert 3 or 4 times, and to say that someone that you respect quite a bit liked your art, that was a cool fucking night. So that's what I mean, the kind of show it was. He's not really doing that show anymore. So that's my guest today, pretty good friend of mine from Chicago, is the king of Chicago, knows everything about Chicago, so that's why I got him on, because the Blackstone Rangers are from Chicago. Now, I thought Dave was a little bit more hood rat. It turns out Dave is actually, like, you know, very smart, educated dude that grew up in the suburbs, but he lived in Chicago for a long time. So I thought when I was talking about these streets and these gangs, he would have more stuff, but he still knows some stuff by just being a black man in the vicinity of the city and then living in the city for a long time. Oh, so that's Dave. What have I been up to? Man, let's go first. Number one. My fucked up my knee. The reason I didn't do last week is because I couldn't talk long enough with the pain in my knee to be able to record this. So I had Bruce do it. Bruce is the producer. He cuts up my the podcast, and he cuts up my videos. I was on tour right before Birmingham, Alabama. My knee just started. It just puffed up again and got so painful that I couldn't leave the bed. And I had brought about 10 milligram Percocets just in case my knee went out. And it went out, and it went out so bad, dude. I couldn't leave my bed for, well, I did leave it for a second. I'll tell you about that. On tour, I couldn't leave for 2 days, my little cot. The pain is very interesting, you know, because I'm not a bitch. You know, I don't think anyone would say Steve Fury's a little bitch. But it feels like there are 3 or 4 drills drilling into the inside of your knee. And I mean literally, feels like drills. It's debilitating pain that I writhe in pain, except I try not to move. I have to pee in like bottles because I can't get up out of my bed. I don't eat. I don't shower. So on tour, Burke goes, hey man, I don't know if this is going to be a good idea, you keeping on this tour right now, this run. So I'm going to send you home. Do you want to get sent home? And I was like, okay. He's like, if you can't keep doing shows, you're going to have to get sent home. So in the middle of me feeling like this, because it's true, I need to go home. I need to see my doctor. And I was able to do that when I got home. So in the middle of this, me not being able to leave my bed, running out of opiates too. I'm running out of the pain pills. So I got to go back to my doctor to get more. And I got to really just get in the hospital. So I come back and I fly out from Memphis and I got to take 2 flights. Luckily, Bert is one of the best guys of all time. Sends me home first class. Not a sleeper one because there weren't any sleepers available, but it is first class. And he brought me into Burbank, which was nice of him to do. So I'm just on the plane, pretty mushed out on Percocets, but my knee is just killing me. killing me. And I fly back. That's about 8 hours. I get into Dallas. If you've never been to Dallas, it's a huge airport. And I'm one of the wheelchair people, right? Because I cannot move. I can't do crutches because I can't have the jolting of me doing crutches. I literally cannot move. So I got a guy to wheel me around. The first guy lost me. I've never known what it felt like to be luggage at the airport, but the guy lost me. He left me by a bathroom for 15 minutes. I'm like, are you coming back? What do you... You're the wheelchair pusher. You don't get to take a break. I was by a bathroom and a Chili's. I was at the corner of a bathroom and a Chili's. I never thought I'd be stuck there. Most Chili's do end in bathrooms, but I was on the corner of it. And there's just a woman staring at me, eating cheese fries, being like, tore your ACL? Yeah, I tore my ACL. I'm just like, listen, number one, people keep asking me, what did I do? What happened? So 10 years ago, I tore my ACL, I tore my meniscus, and I tore my MCL at the same exact time. My knee pretty much exploded. Didn't walk for 6 months. Got the surgery. Came back. Now, about 10 years later, for some reason, it'll flare up. And by that, I mean normally while I either sleep without a knee brace or something, I'm tweaking my knee. And then it swells up and becomes incredible pain. It just happened for the first time about a year ago, mid-pandemic. I was at my cousin's wedding. My knee hurt before then. I don't know what's going on. I go to her wedding. That night, debilitating pain. I mean, I'm crying. I'm weeping. I can't move. I'm at this. This is actually a funny story. They rented a giant wine orchard mansion in Temecula for the wedding. I'm sleeping on the couch. And I can't move, but the guy next to me is sleeping. There's another guy sleeping on the couch. He's got headphones in. I'm crying to try and get him his help. He can't hear me, and I got to get up to piss. And I do it one time. When my knee hangs, it hurts a lot too. And it hangs when it touches, does anything. So I'm hopping over to go do this, and it feels like someone's drilling. So I try hopping, then I try ass scooting in the back, then I try to do all stuff. I finally piss, finally get back to my bed. It took me 25 minutes of incredible pain, okay? Then I gotta pee again. Because that was, you know, it was a wedding. It was the beginning of a wedding, first day. I was drinking. And the only thing around me are these bottles. And so I was peeing in the bottles and then just sticking them in the couch. And then in the morning, I went to the hospital. They did an MRI. They don't find anything. I go back. Hopefully my knee gets better. It doesn't. I have my buddy come and pick me up. I leave that mansion without getting the piss bottles. So someone sat down and was like, oh, so there's a water bottle here. But I put it deep. You know what I mean? Like, you know those couches that somehow just keep going? You're like, I didn't know there was a studio apartment in this couch. That's what I did. And it was securely done. And honestly, it wasn't done as a joke. Obviously not that funny of a joke to piss in a bottle and leave it in. I mean, not a good joke, but kind of funny. So, yeah, did that. Then that happened. I was out for almost 2 months with that one. And I was good for a while, and it started happening again. And you're like, Steve, well, did you tear your ACL? Did you do this? Did you do this? Listen, I've gotten 3 MRIs, all almost 2 years apart. My knee has not deteriorated whatsoever. My ACL is still intact. They do not know what's wrong with me. But this time I come back, fly home. Immediately go to the emergency room, maybe the worst emergency room I've ever been to in my life. There were 3 of us on a Saturday night on Sunset at Kaiser. 3 people. Took me 2 hours to get in. It's like, I think I could be a doctor. I could learn doctor by the time I got in this place and help these 3 people. 3 fucking people? Dude, for an hour and a half, no one went in. Like, it's like, shouldn't there be more people that fucking work here? So, I get in there. I'm in pain. This is when the peak pain. So I get home the first day before I go. I'm just gonna try and chill And then the elevation swelled up my knee even more from the plane ride. I am in insane pain. So I go, fuck it, I'm going to go to the hospital. Order a new, or no, my girlfriend takes me, comes home, takes me. Gets off early because it's that bad. I get in there. They won't let her in because of COVID. When, honestly, I've been going to the emergency room every couple months for about 2 years now because of this fucking knee. And they always let him in. And then I kind of shitted on that fucking receptionist. And I think that's why she buried me on the wait list to get in the office. And it took so long. Whatever. She's being a bitch. She was like, well, the sign's been here. I was like, lady, I've been here enough to start getting paid. You know what I mean? Like, I've got a schedule. And I know every time I've been in here with peak COVID, people have been allowed to have one person in here. But whatever. Fuck her. She was being a bitch. I get out. I get it in. So with all the dope sick show and all the, you know, opiate paranoia right now, which, you know, doctors aren't giving out opiates anymore for pain. So there's no pain management now. And listen, I don't have a problem with pills. I used to sell them, and I still don't have a problem with pills. I think some people are just more prone to addiction, and some people aren't. And I'm one of the people that just somehow magically with this thing isn't. So I go in there, and I'm just like, dude, I just need, this is what I need, man. I need 10 to 20 pills. I need them to get me through the peaks like this. And then I need it when I'm coming down or coming back up or going back on tour. I just need it to where if my knee's hurting, I can get on stage. That's all I need. But with the new, there's like new pill reform, the guy goes, I can't give you any narcotics. And he gives me this Mexicol or something like that, Melicol. It was a nonsense anti-inflammatory. So they helped. I spent almost 5 hours in the hospital, ER, waiting for a doctor. To no avail, to get pain pills that I never got. It was a fucking nightmare. But the thing is, once you start going to the ER, it bumps up your appointment time with your real doctor, that you get to cut the line. So I get to cut the line. So that was on like a Saturday or Friday, and I get a call on Wednesday. I get a call. Talked to the guy last Wednesday a couple days ago. Also, while I was on the road, I was DMing through the Kaiser Permanente app. My doctor being like, the first day my knee's getting swollen, I'm like, hey, man, might need some anti-inflammatories and some pain pills. Think you can help me out. Day later, I'm like, hey, man, it's starting to go real down. Can you help me out? I don't want to be cooked or kicked off this tour. Because, man, I lost a fair amount of money because I wasn't able to go on this tour. And I lost a fair amount of new fans. It was 10 shows. I lost close to a lot of money. So, and this is not something that's going to last me forever. I will not always be opening for a superstar comedian and be able to learn and be able to experience life like I have with Bert. So I have to do it every second I can. Also, man, this game is it's like a sports team. Second you get injured, someone else is willing to take your spot. And guess what? Each time you let them take a swing at your job, they might be better than it. So that's why I didn't want to leave. So I'm like, hey, man, can you just fuck, all I need is to be on stage for 15 minutes to an hour a night. That's all I need from you people. Can you help me out? And he doesn't reply. I don't know if his nurse was on a break or something, but they didn't reply from Thursday to Monday. So I get bumped up and I get moved up to Wednesday. Just talked to my doctor. I had an offering to go into surgery on Tuesday, this Tuesday in about 5 days. The Tuesday you guys will be hearing this on. Or I could do it at a little bit later. But this is the thing I got coming up. The Just for Laughs auditions I've told you guys about, I already got bumped up to the second round. I don't have to do the first round. I get a bye. So that's saying, you know, that's like the NCAA tournament. You don't have to play to get in. You're already in. You're one seed. So it's like someone saying, don't fuck this up, and you got a real chance. Then on Friday, I have the Netflix thing. I can't give that up. Then I've got a bunch more tour dates. So I go, okay, man, if it's a scope, I'm just getting a scope, and he's going to go in. They're going to clear out everything. They're just going to clear out everything, see what happens. I also didn't tell you guys what they think's wrong. So I go, okay, I heard a scope you can get out of there within a week or two. And he goes, you know what, man, I'm going to be honest with you. Some people do about 2 weeks to 2 months. And if I do that right now, I will miss the maybe most important time of my career. Something I have built for the last 10 years to get to. To get to tour with a superstar comedian. To get to try my best in front of the people that matter at Netflix. And to try and get JFL, which I should have had last year. Which I didn't get, which is fine. That didn't happen. So he goes, okay. And I go, okay, am I going to fuck up my knee anymore? Because the MRIs, the reason I keep going in there is they don't really see anything. But this new guy I got, they bump me up because I keep going in there to the, apparently Kaiser's partnered with the Dodgers, and he's the guy who works on the Dodgers. So he's supposed to be pretty good. And he's looking at my knee. He goes, you know what, man? For what you're going through, my bet is there is no cartilage left in your knee. He says that because he says these MRIs look decent. Your graft is still in place on both sides and the back with your ACL. And he goes, there is a small tear. And he says it looks like it might be a flap. So he thinks what's happening in my knee is that the cartilage is wearing down. And the thing about the MRI is it can't really detect cartilage that well. So you have to go in. So he thinks there's a little flap that of the tear. And sometimes when I tweak my knee or overextend a little bit, the flap gets caught. That pushes down, that causes the intense pain, intense swelling. And I go, okay, well, I can't miss everything I have to do. Will I be able to live? You know, is it going to cause a bunch more damage? He's like, I don't know, man, you seem to be fine right now. He's like, I would just worry about the cartilage maybe. And I go, okay, well, I'm going to start on June 1st. That's the last, the tour with Bert ends in May. And then June 1st, or then end of May, I've got to go to my friend's wedding. One of my best bud's wedding, Sam. So I say, okay, I'll do it after that. So that's locked in. So my job now is to really stay pretty fucking not moving. So that I don't tweak my knee again. Good news, I'm still working right now. Still back to walking. Really the trick is I got to just start sleeping in my knee brace, but the problem is you ever slept in a fucking knee brace? It's not fun. Let's go to what I've been up to. So we just tore the South. We went to, really went to everywhere, Macon, Florida. I've had to change, you know, I always get so scared of the South because really stereotypes, but mainly, you know, the stuff I talk to it about is pretty West Coast. I like the West Coast. You know, I almost feel like instead of trying to spread me around all the way to the country, let's just focus on the West Coast, Arizona, Nevada, Texas, California, Oregon, and Washington. Because, like, the South, man, they just don't love me. You know, they don't. Sometimes they don't have Mexican food. So anytime I talk about Mexican or Chipotle, they don't really know what the fuck I'm talking about. So the bit doesn't work when I start making fun of the size of a burrito. They have this false veil of Christianity where it permeates everything. So when I'm talking about, you know, doing drugs or this kind of thing, they're pretending they don't do it. I'm talking about sex. They're pretending they're not doing sex. They don't have Planned Parenthoods. They don't believe in condoms because they're too fucking religious. It's like everything I talk about just doesn't slap. But the people, the fans that I do make down there are great. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, I definitely have to change my set when I go down there. What else? The war's been crazy. I don't know shit about that, man. I can't talk about it, but I just hope they don't bomb L.A., Oh, here's a little funny story. So I run my show, The Setup, LA, with my buddy Richard Sarvate, Abhay Nankayani, and Zach Chapelloni. And it's my job to book people, and I put out the weekly email to remind everybody. Well, this email I do, it's called Setup Live or Setup LA, and then the date. But we also have a private booking email, and the guy who we run the show with, you know, me, Richard, Abhay, Zach, where we talk about everything. And that one, you know, we talk a little bit more open about the way we feel about people than the other one. So They write me a one. So I'm kind of on tour right now, a little bit on the Percocet side. My knee's killing me. They DM me on the Facebook one, which is our official one with just us guys. And they go, hey, who should we have close this? I go, you know what? It's a good lineup. I wouldn't have the Chloe girl close. She's not that funny. Okay. About 45 minutes later, I get a text from one of the comics on the show, and they screenshot me saying, this girl's not funny. And I go, how the fuck did you get? And then I look, and I put that. Oh, and then I say, make sure you guys send me like a rating system of how everyone does so I can book them again, because it's very important. Bro, I put that in the one that goes to everyone on the show. Not a good look, my guy. Apparently everyone started laughing, but me just being bad at everything actually saved my ass, because apparently I didn't add the Chloe girl to the show. The opening email. So she didn't see it. But I wrote that in an email to everybody while the show was going on. So probably made an enemy there. I'm going to guess that someone would tell her, because it's just so funny. But you know, and you could be like, well, then you should never talk bad about people. But it's like the inside booking email. I need to talk about these people. Like, what am I supposed to just say vague comments all the time? No. Or you could just be like, right, look where you fucking write that. It's a little important, don't you think? Here's one thing I'm not getting with understanding with inflation. Okay. This one's just my question. Back when I was a kid, right, because everyone goes, you know, well, things are kind of the same price. They're just a little bit more now, because when you're a kid, you got paid less and things cost less. When I was a kid, you could get 29-cent cheeseburgers and 29-cent hamburgers and 35-cent cheeseburgers on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I believe, at McDonald's. And back then, you could also get like two cheeseburgers for a dollar, stuff like that. And it was incredibly cheap even back then, even as a child. Whereas now, if you go to a place, getting just an off-brand hamburger is like $2 or $3. And it's like, it doesn't feel cheap now. So wouldn't inflation make it still seem cheap, you know? Like if I bought something for a dollar and I was getting paid $10 an hour, it should feel the same of me buying something for $10 if I'm getting paid $100. But it doesn't feel like that's happening. So I'm not really understanding everything. I don't know. I guess this one really wasn't very funny. I'm just keeping people up to date. You're going to skip it if you want. Oh, this one here. This one is what we need to talk about right now. I have found the best marijuana I've ever had in my life. It's official, okay? It's from West Coast Gardens, my guy Mike Olson. This weed is so fucking good. You guys know I sold weed. I grew weed. I've smoked weed since I was 13 years old. I'm telling you, this guy's weed is the best I have ever had. This man is an artist, and this company, West Coast Gardens, is the best I've ever had. So if you smoke weed, especially if you're in Sacramento, California, or the West Coast, when you go to a cannabis club, ask for West Coast Gardens, okay? This guy had this watermelon Zittles that was insane, this Scotty, he has this gelato guava. I'm talking the crystals on this stuff. I was smoking joints and passing out. If you are anywhere and you want to smoke on the same weed that I smoke, make sure you get West Coast Gardens. This stuff blew up my fucking mind. I was so high yesterday playing Elden Ring, I lost track of time. I didn't know who I was. I was so high, my TV looked like a goddamn portal to space. This stuff made my knee feel better. Makes my head feel better. I couldn't suggest this anymore to any human being alive. West Coast Gardens. Go to your cannabis club. Either ask them to pick that stuff up or ask for it and smoke it. And you tell me that it's not the best weed you've ever had in your goddamn life. All right, everybody. That is this episode. I want to give a shout out to Comedy Store Records for allowing me to record there and being one of my producers. I want to give a shout out to Dr. Joe Hostel for the research and my guy Bruce Gray for the editing. This week we got the Black Peace Stone Nation Rangers with my guy Dave Hellum on the World on Drugs podcast with me, Stephen Fury. Bye. Dave Hellum, good to see you, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here, Stephen Fury.
Very happy to see you. You just got passed recently. How's that going?
Every day is like Disneyland up here, man.
I know.
I just walk around and park my car in a parking lot, and I'm just happy to be alive, man.
Isn't it? It's not back yet to where it was, but it's definitely a lot better than it was, especially like, well, I think you came here a couple times during the pandemic when it was just like a desolate, sad little wasteland, like, you know, when we're doing those window shows that were just
oh my god. But we were just happy to be here, though.
Yeah, it was just like
on the patio.
It was just like, I want to see my friends once, and to do that I will go bomb into a window.
So you got passed before the pandemic?
Yeah, I got passed a decent amount of time right now, probably like a year and a half before the pandemic. I got here 2.5 years, got a job here within like 4 or 5 months, and then got passed at 2.5, and then I've probably been past 3.5, 4 years.
I was just thinking as I was driving up here, I was like, it's wild that we're both past here. And, you know, like, not in a bad way at all, but, you know, like, it's just been times I've seen you hanging out multiple places. And,
yeah.
And the fact that it's happened or it's happening, you know,
yeah.
It's just pretty fucking dope. You
know? Yeah. It's like the world is our TV show and there's these two co-starring characters.
Right.
That, like, keep things just kind of keep working out for the people around you in your TV show. It's very odd. So first question for you, have you ever heard of the Blackstone Rangers or the Blackstone Nation?
I have. Being from the Chicagoland area, I am familiar with the Black Peace Stone Rangers.
Yeah, Black Peace Stone Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Not too much, though, because I'm from the suburbs of Chicago. My parents didn't let me get too close to that shit. So everything I saw was like in documentaries on Netflix or...
Okay, have you ever been to the South Side?
Yeah. I mean, like, Chicago is one of them places, like, it's different from L.A. Like, L.A. is like, this is all L.A., but, like, no, it's not L.A. I'm in Culver City, right? And they're like, no, but it's still L.A. But Chicago's, like, the same thing as L.A., but they don't call Chicago Chicago unless it is Chicago. So the suburb that I grew in would be, like, Culver City in L.A. Like, it's very close to the South Side. South Side adjacent, but Chicago folks won't let me call it Chicago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just how they roll.
Okay. Well, the founders are Eugene Harrison and Jeff Fort, a.k.a. Abdul Malik Kabah and a.k.a. Chief Malik.
Jeff fucking Fort, man. Hell yeah.
You heard of Jeff Fort?
Yeah. I told you, I used to watch documentaries about these people.
These guys? Oh, okay.
And I'm pretty sure we'll get into it, but they had like a fucking massive complex on the South Side that they would hold their meetings on.
Yeah, they have it's very interesting the way they try to do in the 50s and the 60s, like the Black Power movement, but then also while selling like heroin to everyone in the neighborhood. Both these guys are still active. They're still alive. They're both in jail. And the gang is still active across the United States. They're actually still pretty big.
They sound like, they sound like the Power Rangers. Like it, whenever I hear like Blackstone Rangers, I just think of them like, being like it's morphin' time, but then they just, they just like shoot people.
Yeah, they're just drive-bying someone. There's not nearly as fun. So their formation was from the 50s and the 60s. That's how old these guys are, which is, I thought was pretty interesting. Their origins in the late 50s, the Peace Stone Nation started as the Blackstone Rangers and were originally formed by Eugene Bull Hairston and Jeff Fort while they were at Hyde Park High School in the 1950s.
That's Hyde Park. Hyde Park.
Oh, it's Hyde.
Hyde Park.
Okay. So this is my thing. So like, did you play high school sports?
Yeah.
Would you play people from South Chicago?
No, not too much. Mostly other like suburban schools and shit like that.
Sure. Were South Chicago schools? Were they good?
And basketball, hell yeah.
Yeah, basketball. Yeah.
It's funny though, because like there was like this one high school in Chicago called Mount Carmel. It's a Catholic school in the heart of the South Side on like 63rd and like Stony Island. And it was mostly white Catholic school, but they won the fucking football championship every year. Like Donovan McNabb went there.
Mm. Well, that's when they like peg some kid's family like $10,000 to go to school.
Absolutely. But the South Side was known for like really good basketball programs, like Simeon, like Derrick Rose.
Oh, Simeon's in the South Side?
Hell yeah.
Is it a nice high school or kind of shitty? They're so prominent.
It was a good high school, man. It's fucked up because I don't know if you ever saw that documentary, Benji, for the ESPN 30 for 30 about Ben Simmons, who was like the number one.
The guy, and then he died or whatever.
He got shot during fucking lunch, like, because he went outside and was arguing with his girlfriend about stuff. But the South Side is, it's like.
We'll get more into the South Side.
Okay.
There's going to be more. There's going to be a lot more questions about different areas and stuff like that.
It's all good.
The gang formation was largely due to Fort noticing that black troublemakers would be immediately removed from their school in order to appease the white parents in the district. The gang has had multiple names, including the Almighty Peacestone Nation, El Rukins, and is currently known as Black Peacestone Nation. The gang originated and operated out of the Woodlawn neighborhood of the South Side of Chicago. So, Dave, where in Chicago are you from, and when did your family get to Chicago?
It's funny. I'm from South Holland, which is a suburb of Chicago, but one of the last neighborhoods I lived in was in Woodlawn on 60,
really?
On 64th and Woodlawn, right near that high school Mount Carmel I was telling you about. And what you may or may not know is that the University of Chicago has bought up all of the South Side around that area, around Hyde Park. So what was kind of like a fucked up area at one point, it's just like a big ass coffee shop there on 63rd and Woodlawn, called Robust. And if you keep walking, like, you know, if you just keep walking north a mile, like, you're in the heart of white people in Hyde Park. So it ain't that gangster no more, man.
Wow, that's interesting. Kind of like USC. You know, they're in South Central, but then everything they bought around them. Excuse me, I do that nonstop.
Oh, that was disgusting.
Yeah, I know. That was honestly that was like half of my girl. It was a half of a Mc.
McChicken?
Yeah. Now the McBiscuit, whatever the beginning day one is. I had my girlfriend ate half and then left it for me. So during their youths, when did your family get to Chicago?
My family? My family was born and raised in Chicago, man. So,
like, are your grandparents from Chicago?
No, nobody from Chicago is from Chicago. Like, all the black folks from Chicago migrated from, like, the South. So my grandparents came from Georgia and Arkansas. And my grandma, my dad's had, her people are from Cuba. So, I don't know when people actually got there because I don't.
But your parents were born there.
Yeah, my folks were definitely born there.
So you're definitely. I think that's two generations count.
Yeah.
During the youth of Bull and Fort, Woodlawn became a predominantly African American neighborhood. Gangs were a common part of the neighborhood for troubled kids looking for structure and a feeling of belonging. The only area of predominantly white kids that remained was a private school called Mount Carmel High School. The gangs were very aware that they could never bring territory disputes and skirmishes to that area because as soon as they troubled the white kids, they knew police would come after them in full force. This was not helped by Mayor Daley's campaign to isolate and separate black neighborhoods by creating high-rise housing projects and refusing to build new schools to accommodate all the children moving to the area.
Mm-hmm.
So we already described what Woodlawn, you said it was a good area. Is the South Side, because you said, I guess Woodlawn is in the South Side, is it as bad as they say, and do you have any personal stories from there?
The South Side is like, I really hate how it's kind of like victimized to be like this piece of shit or gangland. And the further south you go, it is bad, but it's just a lack of resources, man. And it's just not like people, I don't care what color you are. Like if you don't give people opportunities to have jobs, they're going to find ways to eat.
Yeah.
Whether it's legal or illegal, right? But to answer your question, like, there's an area in Chicago. So the way Chicago's shaped, you have like the Loop, which is like downtown. Then you have the South Loop, which is like, you know, and like the southern part of it. And then you get into like the South Side, but that's like the nice South Side where like people are still able to like make good money. It's very, very diverse. And I love the area called Bronzeville. And that's the shit, man, in terms of just being out there in the culture and Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you kind of get past Hyde Park, things kind of getting a little more fucked up, you know. But I love the South Side in terms of the culture. They have the best lounges. Like, if you're ever in Chicago, if you're ever when I'm there with you,
yeah,
I'm taking you to a South Side lounge.
What's the difference between a lounge and a bar?
I don't know, man. I guess like it's not, but we just call them lounges in Chicago.
Oh, really?
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a fucking bar, but it's just a place where like. Just be like a bunch of old cool cats. Like ain't nobody fucking, like, outside might be hell. It might be a bunch of shit going on, but inside, nobody's on no bullshit.
Almost like a club or something.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, the early days of the Blackstone Rangers. Bull and Fort were joint leaders of the Blackstone Rangers and both demanded respect for the organization. They would meet to discuss hits as well as plans. They didn't often have disagreements, but Bull would put his Blood family ahead of his Blackstone family. In one incident, he learned a gang member Lefty had pressured his younger sister for sex. Bull immediately contacted his top enforcer, Lawrence Slim, a.k.a. Killer Kane, and ordered him to kill Lefty. Sick fucking name, Killer Kane.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
That's a good one. Fort found this to be a problem because he was not consulted about the hit and he didn't want to hurt gang membership. Lena Harrison and Annie Fort, their mothers, intervened and were able to get Bull and Fort to discuss their differences while stopping the hit on Lefty. So this was in the 50s. Do you remember when Chicago's gang scene might have took a worse turn for your worse in your lifetime, or is it kind of always more or less where it was today?
People talk about gangs in Chicago like they were more like fraternities, like back in the day. Like they kind of like romanticize them. But I feel like growing up, I was born in the 80s, and like crack hit Chicago super tough. So like what I knew about gang culture was kind of like just tied into all of that shit crack involving like the crack epidemic. And people were just out, like, hustling, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but when I talk to older cats who were, like, gangbangers, they talk about it like it was, like, the Sharks and the Jets from, like, West Side Story.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not that shit no more.
Yeah, no. Dude, definitely once you start bringing in, well, you know, once one guy shoots another guy, then you got to get shot back, and then it just stays on that one. You can't just one guy
you
shoot
saw boys in the hood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just kind of, you know, eye for an eye. A lot of it makes sense, you know, if you're in an area and you're getting beat up and some people are going to protect you and you got no one else in your life. In the beginning, it makes sense. Both Bull and Fort were highly loyal to their mothers, and their mothers could order and ask Blackstone Rangers for anything. In the late 1950s, they were a small group of about a dozen or so boys known for small crimes like theft, breaking, entering, and getting into street fights with members of the Cobras and other rival Southside gangs. The original territory, which is very interesting, was Blackstone Street between 64th and 65th, where you were. Have you ever been on this? I already said. We already did that one. Here's a question I always had, you know, people are talking shit pretty much on the South Side. Let's say I'm walking down the street in kind of a rough neighborhood in the South Side, and I'm talking me as a human being. You think I'm going to get, is the problem that like I'm going to get robbed, or like everyone always says, like you can't play basketball there because people like just get straight bullets all the time.
You mean you as in, yeah. like Steve Fury?
Steve Fury, white guy, normal white guy walking alone.
They're not going to fuck with you. They're not at all because they don't want that heat coming to their neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? And to be honest with you, like, if you're an older person, I say like older than like 25, you're fine. Like,
yeah.
Like nobody's fucking with you like that. It's mostly like the kids doing shit like that.
Yeah.
So, and I lived in a neighborhood in Chicago where it was all Latin Kings, a Mexican neighborhood called Little Village. And somebody got like shanked and died on the corner where I live. But I never had a problem with that shit, man. Like as long as you just kind of mind your business and
keep your head down.
Have jeans that fit, you know?
Yeah.
People don't bother you, man.
I would agree, for sure. If you're not dressing the part of something, I don't know why someone would kind of come up and check you, unless they were just trying to rob you. The Blackstone Rangers quickly gained a reputation for being the toughest gang of boys in Woodlawn. Soon enough, adult gangsters were involving them in organized crime because they knew they couldn't face serious prison time as minors. The Blackstone Rangers quickly became versed in selling drugs, pimping prostitutes, running gambling dens, extorting money, protection money, exploiting troubled children. Bull and Fort make a habit of recruiting kids under 19 and pay them very little to serve as lookouts and couriers while keeping the major of the profits for themselves. You ever have any friends that ever joined a gang?
Man, hell yeah. I got comedians in Chicago who are gang members.
Yeah?
I won't say they're former. Like I think they still are parts of the gang, but you know, it's just the culture. I was at a bar in Inglewood here, and this new bar on Market Street where I live, and this lady was like, "Yeah, we all in gangs, but we kind of signed a pact not to do no dumb shit in here." And I was like, "Oh, okay, like that's cool, right?" So, I think a lot of times with I look at gangs as kind of like fraternities for people who didn't go to college a lot of times, right? And a lot of it might have fucked up roots, but it's like families for the people out here. And, you know, so I see it. I'm not trying to glorify it or anything like that, but I also don't see it as something that is like as big of a deal as people make it. But at the same time, I've never had a negative experience with shit like that.
And from all the people I've talked to and stuff like that, they're always like, you join a gang, you're either going to end up in prison or a box. And, you know, that's a large chunk. But it does seem you can kind of retire.
Yeah.
Does seem like you can kind of retire in, like, your 30s to where you're like, you know, you're still a part of it, but you're not like, you don't got to do all the stuff. You don't got to trap. You don't got to sell drugs. You're just kind of like a grown-up guy.
You just saw Kanye just did a fucking concert for...
That was the most insane thing ever.
For Larry Hoover. Like, you know, I'm like, what?
Larry Hoover is one of the worst people that ever fucking lived. I was at that concert. And I was like, yeah, free Larry Hoover. And I was like, you know, I'm going to look up Larry Hoover. He's a pretty bad guy. And the reason he's in solitary confinement for so long is because he kept being a bad guy. Like, he went to jail, and he still ran the gang for a very long time, then went to solitary and still ran the gang, and then now he's been in solitary for, like, 15, 20 years.
He's still in solitary?
Yeah, he's still in it.
Damn.
So that sucks. But also, you know, they can't kill you, so what else are they supposed to do? You keep doing the thing. It's just there's so many people that feel like that concert could have gone to help organizations than, like, Larry Hoover. And then you got all these, like, little white girls walking around in baby blue sweatshirts that say, free Larry Hoover. I'm like, this bitch has no idea what the fuck she's talking about. It was a wild. It was a fantastic concert.
Kanye is a wild man.
Fantastic concert. But,
I did not know you were there.
Yeah, were you there?
No. Too much traffic for me, man. Like, all that shit.
You can take the train. That's what I did. Took train to downtown.
I mean, it's Super Bowl weekend. Right now, and I don't know if you noticed, but traffic is fucking crazy right now.
Yeah, it took me 30 minutes to get here, and I came. That's why I fucked up, because I left early, but it's like, and then at nighttime, it's just going to be even worse. But as a reputation grew, Bull and Fort were appointed as Big Chief and Little Chief by older gangsters. This is pretty funny. Bull earned Big Chief by being street smart and savvy, while Fort was titled Little Chief because he was short.
That's it.
Bull worked on merging gangs into the Rangers, while Fort worked on adding low-level initiates to the gang to bolster their numbers. Bull earned Big Chief by being street smart and savvy, while Fort was nicknamed Little Chief because he was short. Kind of fucked up for Little Chief, but pretty funny. What were some of your nicknames throughout life, and did you ever know anyone that had a really funny one?
I went through this phase where I was trying to be a rapper in high school.
Yeah, me too.
This is like the era of Wu-Tang, like the 90s. So, you know, everybody, like ODB was like Big Baby Jesus, Osiris.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody had multiple names. So my first rap name was Molasses Blade.
Okay. That's very Wu-Tang generated name thing on, like, the internet. Have you ever tried one of those?
No.
Oh, okay. But that's like Liquid Swords, I guess.
But do you know why? Why my name was Molasses Blade?
You're slow, but you're sharp.
Oh, yeah. My lyrics cut you slow.
Yeah.
But deep, right?
Yeah.
So...
very like BET poet, but the poem one, too.
I became this person... To the point where that was my first email address, but it was too long. So my first email address was Lasses Blad at AOL.
Blad or Blade?
Blad. The E didn't fit. It was Lasses Blad at AOL.com.
Pretty funny.
And then I got to college, and I wanted to keep this rap thing going. So I guess I kind of always wanted to be a performer. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But my name changed to Twig.
Twig?
Twig, like T-W-I-G. Okay. You know why?
Because you're part of something bigger or something?
Because I snap on niggas, okay?
Okay, like, that's fun.
I snap, right? So, like, you know, that was it. And then I just became me at some point. But those are some of my nicknames growing up.
Well, that's funny, too, because, like, you see, like, I do feel like in the 90s or back then, someone's name meant something, whereas, like, now a kid is literally... I mean, from, like, you know, the 2010s, where they would go to the Wu-Tang name generator and just get a weird name. And now kids' names, I don't think, really mean fucking anything.
Wu-Tang is so, like, it's so trendy, like, now. Like you see, like you said, like little white chicks walking around with, like, a
Wu-Tang shirt.
You see, like, a Wu-Tang shirt at fucking Urban Outfitters.
Mm-hmm.
And people have no idea. Like, this is some of, like the most grungiest,
yeah, New York
dirtiest
dudes.
Shit, you know?
Yeah, it is funny. Well, that was one of my. I don't know if someone said this that was famous, but I was telling one of my friends this. But it's like when they got mad at DaBaby for like gay slurs,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, he shot people before. Yeah. Like, and like when people get mad at, like, a lot of these rappers for the things they say, it's like you're getting mad at a guy who, you know,
might actually be like a bad person. He has probably rapey, like some of them have rape charges and stuff. And you're caring about what he says. Like people are, what they care about now is so
they
fucking insane.
They just skip over.
Yeah.
The greatest hits.
Yeah, yeah. Like the thing that it's like, you saying the F word means nothing compared to what this guy did.
Yeah.
And I don't give a fuck. You know, I like the art form for what essentially what it is.
I have more opinions about that, but that's a whole different podcast.
Okay. Coming into their own, in the 1960s, the U.S. government sent millions of dollars to poor communities across the U.S. to help them lower crime rates and create programs to keep kids out of trouble. Italian mobs took possession of most of the enforcers associated with the gangs at Woodlawn, and that the money that the youth organizations waived at Fort and Bull bought their alliance. So essentially, the youth organizations were getting these money, and then they would pay off this gang to have their kind of members look like they were part of these youth organizations, mm-hmm. so they keep getting money. Fort and Bull promised their local preacher that they would run youth programs out of the local church as long as he provided a place for them to hang out. Through this, they obtained nearly $1 million during the 1960s. The Stones soon transformed into the gang to join. They combined their extortion, gambling days, and pimping with the money that they were being paid from the Poverty Youth Initiative.
That's funny.
It's insane how our government was essentially funding gangs in the 60s. What's one of the weirdest ways you ever made money?
Probably the most insane. I used to be a bouncer in college,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a tough guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when people get into fights, when we like really drunk, I'm like, "Excuse me, would you please leave?" Okay, guys.
You're looking for security. Like, is anyone going to break this up?
Okay, guys. Could you please get out of here? One of the weirdest jobs I had, probably the most racist jobs I've ever had, was at this place called Jeepers. It was like a bootleg Chuck E. Cheese. And instead of Chuck E. Cheese, which is like a big rodent, our mascot was JJ the Purple Monkey, right? And I'm not making this shit up.
it sounds like your gluten intolerancy bit. No, where you just like go weirder and weirder with the examples.
I'm not making this shit up, dog. I would be out on a corner with a fucking monkey, a purple monkey costume waving the traffic, like just dancing. And I was like, the NAACP has to know that I'm doing this and shut this shit down because this is not okay.
Mine was probably in high school. Me and my buddy used to rent out like halls, like Elks Lodge or something like that, and we'd throw a dance party. And we'd charge people. We'd make a decent amount of money.
In Sacramento?
Yeah, in Sacktown. The biggest one we ever had is my buddy David Kunasaki. He was a Buddhist, and we needed a new place because we were kind of like burning through venues because we were like, 16, and we would go in there and have a bunch of 16-year-olds getting fucking blackout drunk and taking ecstasy.
Oh, wow.
So then he goes, why don't we throw it at my Buddhist church basketball gym? So like in Sacramento, there's a huge thing called Asian Basketball League where like there's like they're called the Barons and the Dragons and things like this. And it's for Asian kids to come. And you can have like one black kid, but he's got to be like half black. And then they play each other. But what they're interesting is they're very good at shooting. So our basketball team was actually won state a couple times for just these tiny little Asian girls. So then we go there and throw this big party and just – really ruined his name and his family's name through that place because it was buck fucking wild, man. We had girls like twerking on stage that were like 16. I was 16 too, so it's not a problem.
Okay, R. Kelly.
Yeah, it's not anything bad that way.
I believe I can fly.
But yeah, that one was a pretty fun one. That was a really great way to make money. That was the first time I was like, I kind of like producing.
They had a basketball team in Peoria, Illinois, and the name of the team was the Peking Chinks, right? And they had, yes, I'm not lying. And it was an Asian person with like the eyes were squinted, and this existed for like 50 years before somebody was like, hey, this is fucked up.
Yeah, that was super fucked
up. That's super fucked up. So when you just mentioned basketball, I just want to share that story about Peoria being a shitty town. Also,
that's the one who did a lot of the racist shit, right? Wasn't that the Nazis one that allowed the people to march?
Yeah, then
a lot of that stuff, yeah.
Also, the birthplace of Richard Pryor. So
I did go to Peoria, Illinois. I stood next to the
statue. I saw that on your Instagram.
That was fun. That's not a bad statue. It kind of looks like him. The social and religious institutions receiving federal funding made sure to stay on the good side of the Stones since they played the part of reformed youth to ensure the millions of dollars of government money kept flowing to Woodlawn. Fucking wild. Bull became a military-style general who would organize troops to take care of problems, while Fort became the diplomat who would resolve things without violence. Fort would talk to and include all levels of the organization, while Bill focused on leadership and resolving conflicts between high-level members of the Stones. As of now, they have government funding, neighborhood protection, and a strong hierarchy. They're almost essentially on top of the world right now. Do you remember a time you felt on top of the world?
I feel on top of the world right now, Steve, here.
Yeah?
In addition to, like, you know, being passed here, which is a fucking big deal. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think people realize how as a writer out here in L.A., you go through ups and downs.
Yeah.
Working on shows, not being employed. So you can feel happy. You can feel sad because, you know, the money is good when it's good. Mm-hmm. When it's not, it's not. But it was a goal always here to be passed here, man. So, and I was talking to Laura Bites, and she was like, man, you're a paid regular at the greatest comedy club in the fucking world.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I said that to somebody, and they were like, "No, this is not the best comedy club in the world." And then they were like, "I was like, what is?" He was like, "The Cellar." I'm like, "No, the Cellar's cool, but it's different. This is a way sexier energy than the Cellar." Right.
Well, I'll give you two reasons why the Cellar isn't. Number one, they have comedy club acts. Here we have theater acts. There's like every lineup has like three or four theater acts on it.
Yeah.
Number two, where do people from LA move to after LA? Nowhere. Where do people in New York move?
L.A.
L.A. So it's like what you're competing is not really a thing. Is that probably the second greatest comedy club of all time? Sure. But the Comedy Store is just flat out better. I mean, you know, you've got Sebastian on a lineup. Bert Kreischer on a lineup.
Bill just drops
in. Bill Burr's here all the time. There was Rock and Kevin Hart were here multiple times last week. All these guys come here all the time. Yeah, they go down there too. But, I mean, this is Los Angeles. New York is great, but it's not Los Angeles.
Long story short, man, I'm still on that high from being passed, and just trying not to think too much into it. But at the same time, I really just I'm taking that in, you know what I'm saying, and appreciating the hard work that it's taken. But also not knowing that this is not the end, you know what I'm saying. Like still working on new material and all that shit. But it just feels fucking great, man.
Yeah, it's almost like being validated for your hard work is essentially it.
That's exactly what the fuck it is.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, I did it. I knew I was good. I had the hardest thing validate me. You know. Okay, cool. And it's like, I'm not going to quit or not doing it. I'm going to still do better. But it's like, okay, I didn't waste my life doing this.
Nah, you have more eyes on you. That's all. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's it.
Okay. Conflict with the devil's disciples. The Stones claimed everything east of their neighborhood is their territory. This did not sit well with factions of the devil's disciples who wanted to use outdoor spaces like Jackson Park. Mm. You ever heard of the devil's disciples?
No, not at all.
I'm pretty sure they got eaten up probably in the 60s or 70s. The Stones were seen as a better and more refined gang of the two since they viewed themselves as a brotherhood and referred to their members as brothers. The disciples referred to themselves as folks, mm-hmm. which earned them the name Dirty Folks from the Stones. That's a kind of cool nickname, though, I like. As conflict increased, redistricting sent disciple members to Hyde Park High School in the heart of Stones territory. This caused kids to drop out at an alarming rate, not because they were joining the street gangs, but because they didn't want to get caught between the disciples and Stones fighting each other all over the school. The Stones were losing the war at first because they were outnumbered 10-1. Bull was quick to act and began forcing smaller gangs in the Stones territory to merge with the Stones, or they would live to regret turning down the offer. Mm. Was there ever an offer that you regret not taking?
Was there ever an offer that you regret not taking? Nah, man. I think that I'm a very calculated person in terms of...
Yeah.
Of just doing shit, and anything that I didn't do was probably for a fucking good reason.
Yeah.
So I don't really have any. I mean, I wish I would have like majored in like theater and shit growing up, but I never had an offer. Like I remember like in eighth grade I auditioned for James and the Giant Peach, and I just wanted to be like a sound person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wrote down like, and they were like, "No, you should audition, right?" So I auditioned and I got the fucking lead role, right? So
you're James?
Yeah, I got that. Oh, that's cool. But I wish I would have just kept going with that shit, right? In terms of stuff like that. So I never got an offer to like be in theater like that. But that's one regret that I wish. Like, I got a fucking math degree. I can't do shit.
Yeah.
I can just do math. Like, what the fuck does that mean, right? So it's not an offer, but it's just something that I wish I would have gone more into is theater and acting type shit.
But I got two. My first one, now these aren't regrets, but they're both things that I've thought about. Last time I was in Jacksonville, I had two strippers say they were going to do it, want to do a threesome with me.
You said no?
Yeah, I got a girlfriend. So, but I was like, can I take a picture of you and send it to my friends to show them?
They said yeah.
How of a good person I am. Yeah, yeah, it was funny. And then the next one is, I don't know this one, but my manager was like, hey, the people at Wild and Out really like you. Do you want to do that? And I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
No, I applaud you for that.
Yeah, I just don't want
to. No knocks anybody else was done wilding out, but
it's not. You might got to get closer to that mic.
It's not my jam.
No, me neither.
It's not my jam.
Especially to be like the white guy on that. Feels like I'm going to be made a fool of a lot. And
that's a cool credit. You seen him on Wilding Out. Steve Fury.
It would be weird, and I go up there with a totally different energy. Mm. And I was just like, it just seemed like I would be embarrassing myself a lot, and I don't really like to embarrass myself. The leader of the Kim Bark Killers refused to give in to their demands initially and received a bullet as a gift.
Hold on. The Kim Bark Killers, where do they come into play again?
They are one of the smaller gangs in the Stones territory that the Stones were trying to merge so that they could fend off the Devil's Disciples.
Okay, cool.
They let him live under the condition that his gang joined the Stones. Soon, the Kim Bark Killers were another piece to the Stones organization. Wow, swallowing up other gangs at a rapid rate to get stronger. What was a team or relationship that made you feel stronger or safer? Could be like a group of friends that was really great that you remember that you maybe miss, or just a camaraderie, or like a special girlfriend or a boss or something.
I remember moving to this school in third grade, and it was like, hella white. The school was like all white kids. And it was like me and two other black kids. We had moved in together at the same time. And we were all like part of like this gifted program. And I just remember us like, those are like my best friends to like, to my day.
Mm-hmm.
Like to this day. Because we just kind of formed a team of just like, you know what, we're going to come in here. We're going to show these white folks that black people are not everything that you see. In these racist ass movies, and and we're gonna be smart, and we're gonna draw Ninja Turtles outside during lunch and just kill shit. And those guys were me, my boy Ed, my boy James, and Maurice. We were kind of like the Four Musketeers in South Holland in 1989.
Did you guys go to high school together?
Everybody but James. James went to the public school, but me, Maurice, and Ed all went to Marian Catholic in Chicago Heights.
Yeah, I got a group of friends I was friends with from first grade to senior year. Only close with one of them now still. But they all did good. As the group expanded, mine would be in high school, man. I have this real problem where I don't like people I don't know. You know, like some guy, if I don't know him, I'm always kind of like, I don't trust this guy. I don't like him.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. And then when I know them, I'm like, oh, ride or die, we're here. And so when I went into high school, the first year I went from a very small high school, middle school elementary combo that was like 30 kids a class. So when I got there, went to a huge one that was like 3,500 for the whole school. And then there were a group of kids that I didn't like because they were kind of the popular kids. And then the next year we all became friends, and those are some of my good friends this day. As the group expanded, Bull and Fort created the Maine 21, where they were joint leaders. Maines were in charge of various areas in the Stones territory, and the number of leaders were far more than the 21 that they started with as they continued to grow. So essentially, the Maine 21 is they went to those guys like the Kim Bar Killers and those different guys. They brought them in there to have the leaders do this thing. It's kind of like a union of gangs.
Mm-hmm.
When they would war with other gangs, it involved brawl fights, fist fights, and they would murder people too. Eventually, the Stones established their area of the South Side and began to take interest in the Black Power movement of the 1960s. Brawls and fist fights. Do you remember the last or biggest fight you ever got into?
Yeah, me and my friend Ed, I was just talking about, it was a bully who kept fucking with us. So we tag teamed him because his name was Irving Kimball. And this is in the fourth grade. And he kept fucking with us for being like smart. Like we weren't bothering him. We were just like, I don't know. But he would always like try to roast us for like being nerdy. And just, like, so one day we decided to just beat his ass. in the back of the recess lot, and we got in trouble for it. But I told the principal why we did, and he was like, "God damn right,
good. That's a good principal. That's a very '80s principal, though.
Yeah,
that's very. You know, what I mean, like the '90s one, it might go either way. But then you get into the 2000s, those guys are like, you can't ever do anything like that. It's like, no, you know, it's getting someone to stand up for themselves is not necessarily a bad thing.
That's how I would be as a principal, you know.
Yeah. It's like, don't do it. Don't go out looking for a fight. But when the shit comes to your doorstep, you got to do what you got to do.
We should write that TV show.
What?
Bad Principal.
And like, we isn't that, that's Janelle James' new show, isn't it?
Abbott Elementary.
Yeah, isn't she a bad principal?
Yeah, she kind of is.
I know. I got another. I had another idea that I tried to write, man.
I have a whole pilot that is
that.
That is that. So I watch it and cry every time I watch an episode of that show. So.
Dude, I got one called Ghosts, where these two buddies start a fucking bed and breakfast, and they're haunted with all these funny ghosts. And then there's a fucking show called
Ghosts. Ghosts.
That just came out. And it's the exact goddamn show. I was like, this shit seems like a fucking joke. The civil rights involvement. As Jeff and Bull adopted the philosophies of the Black Power movement, they imparted to their members that they needed to form their own governments and regulations, since the white man was never going to let the black man take
That's
part.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, not a bad idea. You know, I mean, I would just say, coming from sociopath gang leaders, maybe not the best people, but still a good idea. July 10th, 1966, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. organized the civil rights movement to hold a rally at Soldier Field. Jeff and Bull organized the Blackstones to attend the rally. After most of the people have entered, a large group of Blackstones marched to the upper deck of Soldier Field and quickly spread all around the stadium while carrying banners that feature a 50-caliber machine gun.
That's nice.
Yeah, very intense. Their statement became clear. You can work with us or against us if you plan on organizing in the south side of Chicago. The Stones began organizing with King and even secured as security as King organized a march into the racist Marquette Park neighborhood. So that's pretty fucking dope to start as a gang and end up providing surge security to MLK. This is actually going to be a thing that really starts to take off for these guys from here, is doing a lot of activism, but then still remaining quite shady. What was one situation in your life that you thought was one thing that turned out to be another?
Being a teacher in Chicago, in Atlanta. I really think that was all a stepping stone to be a comedian, to be honest with you. It made me be very comfortable talking to groups of people. And same way as a comedian, a teacher has to get the audience quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you come in, like that first day of class, not even the first day, every day of class with a new subject. And if it's not interesting to the kids, they tune the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with an audience. So I just learned kind of how to connect with people. And I hated being a teacher, but I think about it now. Like, I didn't teach because I love the kids. Like, it really just helped me become, like, to be a comedian. Like, I would never have thought that in my life, but looking back at it now, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, it's interesting to look back at your life and see the tools that you learned that helped you be a comedian. Like, for instance, my parents were divorced very young, so I was very used to living out of a backpack and kind of being on the road and being by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to school for a communications degree that I pretty much helped with that. And you just see, okay, you know, you see a lot of things that you're like, oh, this is, once again, what I'm supposed to be doing. Fort witnessed firsthand as a brick struck King in the head after being thrown by a white protester. Fort used his diplomatic role to call a meeting between the leadership of Chicago's black gangs and King. The Stones led the argument against King that nonviolence would not work, and that if they were going to participate in another march, they were going to bring their guns with them.
They went from being like their security, his security, to telling him that, hey, man, your shit is not working.
Yeah, essentially what they were being his security guard, and then a guy threw a brick at King, and they're like, yo, this isn't working. We're going to bring guns the next time. A heated exchange took place between Stones and the King. King posed the question, if a building was burning and you had the ability to save it, what would you do? The Stones, I believe it was, what the fuck is his name? Fort? No, what's the other guy? Whatever. It was Fort. He said, motherfucker, don't fuck with us. Everyone knows you use water to put out the goddamn fire. Don't play bullshit with us. More curses were uttered towards King, and he replied, water is another option, my brothers, because you don't put out fire with fire. Pretty fucking smooth-ass thing to say. He stood up, brought everyone together and to have a dialogue and make their message clear. When did you stand up and take the stage to try comedy?
I love these segues.
I know. I'm trying. That's the whole point. It's all. I try to get the weird.
When did you stand up?
Yeah.
2009. I went through a divorce. I'm married now, but this is my second marriage. So I went through a divorce in Atlanta. And I was just kind of in a low point of my life. And I was like, man, I was just teaching. I wasn't really happy doing that. So I always wanted to do comedy. Mm-hmm. I had like a 5-minute set that I had written. And I tried it at my friend's house the same night that Kanye performed Runaway. at the MTV Awards when he on that red suit and he was playing the NPC. Anyway, so I did my 5-minute set that I was going to do at the open mic the next day that was run by Clark Jones and Will Miles, called Two Black Guys in Open Mic in Chicago on the north side. And I sat down.
So you left Atlanta and went to Chicago?
Yeah, I moved back to Chicago. Okay. I'm sorry. So I sat down on this stool, and people were like, yo, don't ever do that. Don't ever sit down. Who the fuck are you? But I was just comfortable sitting down, mm-hmm. you know. And
probably from teaching.
Yeah, I think so, you know. And then I just did my 5-minute set, and that shit felt like the greatest drug that I had never had in my life. And that's when I took a stand mm-hmm. up to do stand-up and to answer your question.
Did you go head first after that?
Oh, yeah.
I went pretty hard after that. I was like almost every day I was hitting a fucking open mic.
But I went hard, but I was also, I don't know. If I'm being honest, I felt like I couldn't do comedy without having like a drink before I went on stage because I was very nervous at first, mm-hmm. right? So I would have a shot or two shots. But then one time I went to this very, and I love this club. It's no longer in existence now. It's called Jokes and Notes on the South Side. And I was just hammered, man. And I did like the worst 5-minute set I've ever done in my life. And so bad to the point where they turned the music on. like you know, the Sandman, Apollo yeah, yeah. type shit. And I was like, ooh, I got to take this shit seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't just be up here winging it, you know what I mean? Because I got too cocky.
Especially when the beginning ones are kind of good.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is easy.
This is easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There, I heard about this one club called the Stardome, and I think in Alabama.
In Alabama, yeah. Birmingham.
So apparently their lineups are fluid. So, like, if you're bombing at either the headliner, feature, or opener, you'll get demoted the next show, and the other guy will get brought up. So someone I was talking to, I think in Nashville, this comic from Birmingham that frequent thereafter, he was like, yeah, you know, he's like, I started as the feature, and by the end, I was doing a guest set.
Yo! I would hate that.
Hell yeah, I would. No way I'm not going to fucking go up there for 5 minutes now. I'm embarrassed. I'm leaving. I'll never go back to that club. No, I'm not doing
that. Fuck you, Stardom.
Yeah, fuck you. I'm not going to come back to Birmingham. Who gives a shit?
Fuck you.
More Stones joined King's Chicago marches, and they helped orchestrate 3 marches in one day. Chicago politicians promised to rewrite housing laws restricting black ownership, but the Chicago Freedom Movement lost their direction soon after this victory, and King moved on to cities where they felt they could make quicker progress. Why do you think Chicago politics are so fucked up?
That's a deep question, man. And primarily, it's a lot of corruption. Like, Chicago's historically been a black city. And, like, I'm not saying, it's not even about black or white, to be honest with you. Like, Chicago's just one of them cities where money just gets shit done in terms of stuff. Like, in terms of who can make money, and like, where they can make money. And they don't say it, but, like, the police don't run Chicago. Like, I feel like it's like, underworld type shit mm-hmm. is like, it's a big mafia,
yeah.
Like gang shit, like they run that city, dog. So it's kind of like, it's so fucked up because I feel like the people who are just running it are like, kind of like just puppets in some ways, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, like when they're talking about what they're gonna do to try and fix police, reminds me of almost like Chicago. It's like the people at the top that are in power, they were in power for so long, and they were learned from other people who were in power for so long, and they're learning these ways that it's like the only way that you would ever have to redo something like this is to fire everyone at the top. It's not firing everybody at the bottom. You got to start from the top of where the bad guys are, and then set a new culture. But how do you do that? Normally, the people at the top have a lot of money, and they're not gonna really allow
Man,
you to do that.
It's like the same shit with like the cartel, like. They got way more power than the law enforcement, way more resources, or just as much, just as many resources, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like lip service a lot of times when they say like, oh, we're going to do this to stop this. I'm like, yo, people are going to make money. Mm-hmm. And then if you stop them from making money, they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
Or like straight up. It's like, so you all can say all the shit you want to say, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and there's no way to change it or you're probably going to be killed.
That's the message from this podcast right now.
Yeah. I mean, look at fucking JFK, the murder of that guy.
Yep.
Black nationalism and black power. The Stones adopted more of the black power principles and shifted their colors to red, black, and green.
The Stones collaborated with a local mission to put on a variety show demonstrating black talent in singing, songwriting, dancing, comedy, and acting. They had members who expressed all of these talents and lent them to a show. Have you ever performed in a talent show? If so, what ages and what did you perform?
These questions keep getting worse. Like, did you perform in a talent show? And what age? Hell yeah, I performed in a talent show, man. Who has not? I was.
A lot of people have it, man. You think a talent show is eight people, and if it's at school, there's 1,000 people at school.
So I went to a white high school, I told you. But all the black kids decided to become like Wu-Tang. And it was like 30. this is so funny, but so fucked up. So, because it scared the shit out of the school, because the school was like all white people for the most part. Mm-hmm. But all the black guys became like Wu-Tang. And we never rehearsed. Everybody just like freestyle. Like all 30 people did like a verse, like a minute or two. So we did like a 60-minute performance doing a talent show. And this is a Catholic school, so the nuns are just like, what the fuck are these dudes doing? And we're running through the crowd, like humping the stage, like just doing all crazy shit. And it was the last talent. No, I take that back. I did one in college too, when I was Twig. And but also I didn't prepare for that either. Like, I just freestyled, and then my homie was beatboxing. That was actually kind of dope. But that was the last one I've done. I don't really have a better answer to that question.
No, that's exactly the answer. I don't know what else you thought I was getting. I had a few of them in my elementary, middle school. We used to have them, but like the girls would do it. It was like very in the Spice Girls kind of time. So like this, they would learn a Spice Girls song, and then they would get us to be backup dancers. And this was like everyone would do it. So like I was like dancing. I would never really dance that much. I was just like, I'm just trying to get as close to these girls as possible. And if I got to fucking, because you also like the school would let you go out like 30 minutes early to recess or at the end of the day, get off a little early to go practice these moves. And it's just a way for me to be like fucking 7 trying to hit on women. However, the show was eventually disbanded because the musician who organizes it saw that Maine 21 members would frequently come by and just take cash out of the box whenever they felt like it.
Maine 21.
Those guys, man. The Stones became experts of a dual identity. On one side, they support their community and put in arts programs and open places to provide refuge to black youth that taught them how to take pride in their blackness and discuss the ideas of black power movement and what needed to be done to liberate blacks in America. Simultaneously, they could perform drive-bys, extort money from businesses, perform hits on rival gangs, and ensure their prostitutes were bringing in a steady cash flow. Do you think the duality was a good thing? Like, do you think they used the gang banging to try and help fund the Black Power movement, or do you think they used the Black Power movement to shield their gang banging?
It's definitely the second.
Yeah, it's like, definitely the second.
It's definitely the second. When you try to say, oh, we're not bad because we do kind of like the shit with Larry Hoover that you mentioned in terms of what Larry Hoover... Kanye is like, he's done this for the community. He's like, GD does not stand for Gangster Disciples. It stands for growth and development.
Insane.
It's like but does it though? Right?
Like, Gangster Disciples are like one of the worst gangs in the world.
I mean,
one of them. But it's like, so there's that guy just to think that it's just the weirdest one that he jumped on Larry Hoover. There's like so many people that, you know.
Did you buy a t-shirt?
No, I should have, though, and flipped it. I fucked up that one. It was such an ugly t-shirt, though. It's so boxy and huge and ill-fitting. But I should have.
How much were they going for?
100.
There?
Could have flipped it for more, though. I think I've looked. It's like 350 now.
Wow.
The Stones continue to be heavily involved with the Black Power movement, embrace factions of the movement that were targeting actions against the government. Most gangs thought this behavior would draw too much attention to the criminal activities, but the Stones believe this was the right course of action to avoid persecution while the mainstream groups continued to garner the most attention. In 1967, Fort Bull and 45 members of the Stones were arrested for getting into a brawl with police. The Stones fired guns and threw Molotov cocktails at a police cruiser that drove past their group while they gathered on a street corner. Eventually, 24 police cars arrived and arrested the higher group. So, you know, maybe not the best idea.
I can't wait for this next question. This is the
Well, I mean, this one actually I couldn't really get that fun. I was going to say This is one of the more wild. I mean, firing guns and throwing Molotov cocktails at a police is probably one of the dumbest fucking things I've ever heard in my life.
When was the last time you threw a Molotov cocktail at the police?
Yeah, I know. It's like, are you keeping Molotov? You just keep the Molotov on you, just loaded, the glizzy? Or are you like, I mean, that's like a thing. You know, a Molotov cocktail is like filling with gasoline, then you put shit in it. Have you ever heard of, what's one of the more wild gang stories you've ever heard of in Chicago?
Not necessarily a gang story, but the wildest shit, I saw this teenager jump on top of a cop car and start footworking, which is like this Chicago house music dance where you like, it's like real fast paced. It's like river dancing for like black people, right?
Okay.
And he was just like river dancing on the top of this police car with no fucks given. And this was like kind of doing like that, George Floyd, like Black Lives Matter movement, where people were like, yeah, we're sick of this shit.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna. And then I saw a woman who was just basically like doing a crybaby, which is a dance where you like hump on a surface and you like pound the ground on a police car. But these are not gang related. This is just wild shit that involves police cars.
Did they get the shit beat out of them?
No. You can't beat anybody's ass during a Black Lives Matter rally. You know what I'm saying? They just like, please get off the car.
Please stop pumping the lights.
Please stop. But in terms of gang stuff, I don't know. I can't recall any wild gang stories like that.
This year saw the creation of the Gang Intelligence Unit of the Chicago PD as a response to the 150 gang-related killings across Chicago. This is in, I think, 1967. Aside from the deaths, 117 shootings were perpetrated by black youths aged 17 or younger, just like you talked about earlier, where it's the young guys you got to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
Almost in anything, man. They always say, you know, juvie's a lot worse than prison is. Early 1968, the Black Peacestone Legal Defense Project had launched in order to ensure that members go to trial would not be having to be assigned a public defender. Kind of a bad idea. Have you ever gotten in trouble with the law?
Not really. I mean, one time I did 49 and a 35, so I was speeding.
Yeah, almost.
In a racist-ass town, and I got pulled over, and my license was suspended. I didn't realize it, so I got put in jail for like an hour, but that's about it.
That's not that bad. So the war with the disciples, late 1968, the FBI begins to a misinformation campaign to fuel the gang war between the devil disciples and the Stones. Fucking insane. Agents would send letters saying they had intelligence that each gang had hit orders on leaders. Additionally, Bull was arrested and put on trial for solicitation of murder. Bull was arrested because he ordered a 13-year-old gang member and a 14-year-old member to kill a middle-aged gangster who were interfering with the Stones' business. A Maine 21 member directed the boys towards a car and were told to hit it. The boy shot six times into the vehicle, killing the disciple member sitting inside. The boys went to Bull, who asked if they had taken care of it, and they said they had. Bull gave the boys $6 and told them to share it with those who were at the hit.
Six bucks, huh?
Fucking bucks to murder someone. If you adjust it, it's about $50 a day. What's one of the weirdest ways you ever got paid for a stand-up gig? You ever have a weird...
Like outside of money?
Yeah, outside of money. You ever have anything weird?
I'm trying to think of a wild situation where I got paid. Cause normally, it's just drink tickets. So it's just drink tickets. Nobody's ever like give me like pussy for like a show or nothing like that. So like... I think drink tickets would probably be...
The weirdest one?
Yeah, that's it. Like,
I had like two. I had one, I did a Mexican restaurant, and they gave me 2 quarts of salsa. which was, cool. You know, I was good. One was pico de gallo, one was a hot sauce.
Quarts?
Quarts of salsa. It's like
this big, like a soup thing.
And then the other one was, there used to be a club, not this comedy spot, but a club in Scottsdale, Arizona, called the Comedy Spot. And the guy at the end of the weekend would pay you in cash, but he'd do like the comedy high five, but it was all like fives and ones. So it was like $800 in fives and ones. So I just had this pocket chock full of fives and ones that I had to walk around. That club, they wouldn't let you drink for free, and they wouldn't even give you a fucking deal. You had to pay top dollar, $8 for a fucking beer. It sucked.
That's terrible. And they pay you in small bills?
But yeah, it was just like very like he took it out of the till. I was like, all right, so you definitely don't want any taxes into this, which was also cool too because I didn't pay taxes on it. But I was just walking home because then I walked home because I stayed in some shitty-ass Airbnb. And then I was walking home with all this money and it was wild.